Thank you for tuning in to Diaries of a Dom, plus questions answered, with me, Chastity Queen. And today I will be talking with my lovely slave, CQ's Bunny, and we will be discussing kink shaming. Before we begin, do not forget to subscribe to my OnlyFans under Chastity Queen, where I have many photos and lots of videos to enjoy, and much more content coming often. And if you want a fantastic chastity device or high-quality strap-on, go to LockedInLust.com for my premium 15% off discount using discount code ChastityQueen. You can also follow me on Twitter under ChastityQueen at Queen of Lockup, where I post updates and polls and pictures for you to engage in. And you may also follow me on FetLife under Chastity-Queen, where I welcome friend requests and followers too. As I stated earlier, we're going to discuss kink shaming, and I want to start off by referring to Psychology Today, which is one of my favorite magazines. I enjoy reading it at the poolside or on a beach. I like to just relax and read some of the reflections on that. And so I'm going to read a little bit here from Psychology Today about kink shaming. So it says that to accurately understand the nuanced lived experience of a person who practices or engages with kink, it is vital to reflect on how deeply rooted the problematic stigmatizations and stereotypes truly are. The concept of intentionally invoking shame in others for their erotic desires is not new. The problematic ideological view that sex should not be pursued solely for pleasure is reflected in the various past attempts to or of erasure of sexual freedom and expression, and frankly, has contributed to the assault against any form of sexual expression that is deemed abnormal. It is important to note that kink and sexual practices that are perceived to deviate from the norm only make up a fragment of the dense history of pathologized sexual behavior, as the judgments extended past partnered sex and included masturbation, sexual orientation, gender identity, and more. While varying opinions about erotic desires have existed over centuries, there appeared to be a monumental shift in the late 1800s. In 1886, when Psychopathia Sexualis, the groundbreaking yet profoundly problematic work of Richard von Krafft-Ebing, was published, the pathologizing of sexual behavior took off. It was not only that he opposed homosexuality and fetishism, but he linked them to genetic degeneration and believed that those who took part in unapproved sexual activities were said to be born degenerate and were to pass the bad seed on to their children. Before his work, the perception of fetishism and alternative sexual practices were viewed as expressions of insanity. And while he intended to argue against that point, he created a new and very dangerous narrative that these desires or behaviors were pathological and could be altered through psychiatry. This work became the spark that lit the flame for unwarranted policing and attempted controlling of sexual behavior and expression. In the many decades to follow, and even to this day, views of sexuality and erotic desires have remained incredibly polarized. The focus often remains glued to what is happening in our current time, but to look back and understand the history of the toxic sexual narratives provides a much-needed context for why these beliefs are so fundamentally grounded in the minds of so many. Beyond the work of von Kraft Ebing and Freud, two of the most influential yet problematic individuals who have contributed to the way that we view sexuality, it can also be helpful to look at the shifts that occurred in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders. From the 1950s, when the DSM was first published, to today, there have been massive shifts in the way that sexual behavior and desires were viewed. Many of the changes have come from remarkable and unshakable efforts by advocacy groups, most notably the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom. They fought to shift the focus away from pathologizing these desires and move towards normalizing them. While many positive changes have been made to the DSM, there still is significant controversy and rightful resistance to the DSM's current standards for a paraphilic disorder diagnosis. And many of us in the sex-positive, sex-therapy world hope for continued changes to the DSM. The diagnostic standards and the sex-negative history that has ravaged our views of eroticism have created significant roadblocks for those trying to shift to a sex-positive narrative. Rather than working solely towards acceptance and normalization of erotic desires, we are working against judgment, shame, and often hatred. When false narratives are continuously pushed regarding the kink community, the work remains that much more challenging. The lack of readily available resources, and further, the deep shame that surrounds even attempting to access these resources, keeps folks who are struggling stuck in their pain without the room or opportunity to receive the help they need. Further, the mental health system in which those of us who are advocating for this community are in is so immersed with false information that to navigate through it requires a level of education on the topic of kink and BDSM that was not nearly sufficient in any of our training or graduate programs. As modern-day sex therapists, educators, and advocates continue to fight to dismantle the deep-rooted problematic belief system surrounding eroticism, it is crucial to remain vigilant in our pursuit of quality research and education about the kink community. It is also vital that we create an environment that feels safe and non-pathologizing to those who walk through our doors or log into our virtual sessions. We must also face our own biases and confront them head on, leaning into our discomfort and addressing the ways in which we are actually contributing to any shame for not only our clients, but for people in general. We have all been taught something about sex, whether explicitly through conversations with friends or family, through media, schools, or by personal or vicarious experience. Each of those modes of learning has shaped our worldwide view of how sex is supposed to look. And when confronted with practices that do not align with our views, it is easy to step into a place of judgment. It is in that place where we must fight to free ourselves. Judgment hurts more than just the target of the negative beliefs. Hurtful words and actions rip through people's lives and can end up hurting so many more folks than we can imagine. The work starts with all of us. We must look in the mirror and process whether our reflection is a person who is helping to change the narratives around sex and eroticism for the better, or is contributing to the problem. So again, I wanted to just state that this is an article, you can actually go online and read it, titled Kink Shaming, How Did We Get Here? And then the subtitle is Taking a Look Back So That We Can Move Forward. And that's Psychology Today. So I think that, you know, this article says a lot about how things are moving forward and how things can move backwards as well. And that's what my slave and I want to talk about today. I think we've all been in a place in our life where we've looked at something and thought, oh my gosh, why would they do such a thing? You know, and it's either intriguing to us or it's disgusting. You know, it brings up a visceral feeling. And as the article said, it's based on our own experience, our own environment, our family upbringings, people we meet, maybe good experiences, maybe bad, probably bad experiences too, and our discomfort in figuring out if we should judge or not. And so that's what Bunny and I are going to kind of talk about today regarding kink shaming. And, you know, I deal with a lot of men who engage in kinks that are generally for them, it's very difficult to talk about, come forward about, discuss, especially in an open forum. And a lot of these men would come and see me as a pro dom, and they could be free for an hour, maybe 2 hours of time, be themselves. I mean, I had one person who would come for a weekend or an overnight, and from the moment they got in the door, there was no shaming. It was, you can be who you want to be. I'm going to dress you up. I'm going to make you beautiful. I'm going to engage with you in the way that society doesn't accept. And he suffered a lot in his own environment because he was from a very male-dominated family, very deep, you know, Catholicism, and opinions on men dressing up as women was offensive to people in his family. And so he faced a lot of things that when he came to my door, he was able to drop them at my door and forget about the judgment and just enjoy a safe space. So I think it's important that as a femdom, somebody who is in charge of men and in charge of their sexuality and their gender fluidity, that we're cautious about how we approach it. And of course, there's all different segments to that. There's different kinds of kinks that are involved in femdom, and it can be degradation, it can be humiliation, it can be feminization, it can be, for example, forced by, other things. But anyway, we'll get into that. And we'll get into a variety of things that I've engaged in and how I've approached it. But I'd like to welcome my darling slave, who himself went through a lot of steps to get to the comfortable place that he's at now. I'm very proud of him for coming into kink with an open mind. He was very open-minded, not judgmental at all. He's just not a judgmental person when it comes to kinks and people's sexuality. He's very open book about sexuality. But even for him, it was very difficult. So we're going to talk about that journey, what he went through, something as simple as me asking him. I remember asking him to wear panties to work. So we'll talk about that too. But I will hand the mic over and he can say a little hello. And we will carry further with this discussion.
Hi, yes. CQ Slave here. So I wanted to expand a little bit on the article. It kind of goes into it a little bit with, I know there's been some controversy in Canada, the past decade now with expanding the sex education program. Yeah, for obvious reasons, it's very controversial. However, I have to say that there's actually statistics that prove that like places that have sex education programs have a lower tendency to have teen pregnancies and all that. It's like these are actual statistical facts. I mean, you look all through the Bible Belt in the U.S. and teen pregnancies are higher than the national average. And again, you look at communities that usually have, and I'm going to say that it's, again, more religious fervor tend to have a higher rate of teen pregnancy. And it's because, again, it's like, because you're not getting that kind of sex education while you're coming into your puberty, which, I mean, if anyone who's gone through puberty knows the raging hormones that you face as female or male, it's crazy. I mean, anyone knows this. And you don't know what the hell is happening. Like, it's the worst because you have no idea what's happening. It's humiliating. I mean, like, girls, they have their thing. Like, they come to that time of the month, and the first time it happens, it's like, it is absolutely humiliating for them. I couldn't imagine. But on the other side, you have guys boys, it's like, you know, like, all of a sudden you're pitching a tent in your pants, and it's like, oh shit. I mean, I guarantee you, it's happened to pretty much like almost every boy out there. I'm not afraid to admit it's happened to me. So,
you know, you bring up a really good point there, Bunny, about sex education and the benefits outweighing the risks, and, you know, the perceived risks, I should say. I don't feel like there are risks to learning about your body, learning about the changes in your body, but more so about the changes in your mind. Because, you know, some children don't come into their sexuality and realize their own sexuality. I know people are born, you know, a certain way. Some are born and they just know, you know, that they're this way or that way. And that is totally great. That's supported. It's definitely supported. But there are others that don't really come into their sexuality until puberty starts. I really think that's very important to remember. And when they get those feelings, those emotions of attraction to same sex, opposite sex, both sexes, maybe they're asexual. Maybe I tended to be a little bit more asexual in my feelings when I came into puberty. And it was hard, you know, it was really hard because there's certain things that are expected of you, especially for me. I was brought up in an extremely religious background, very Bible thumping, very anti-sex. I wasn't even allowed to take part in the sexual education program because it might be in opposition to the Bible's belief structure, belief system, and what I was taught within my own family. So, you know, family can have a huge impact on your opinions and your belief systems regarding sex. And even though you want to explore, you want to know, well, what's that about? What's this about? I was in shame of sex before I became a teenager, before puberty. I was afraid. I didn't want to go through it. I hid it from my mom. Like, I didn't even tell my mom when I got my period. I was so embarrassed, you know. And I'm going to be real frank. When I had my period for the first time, I took my underwear, I hid them, and I took them out back in the back, you know, countryside there, because we lived out in the country, and I dug a hole and I buried them. I was so embarrassed. So, you know, and then when my dad noticed my leg hair was growing, I mean, I just felt creeped out even talking about it. Like, he tried to talk to me about it, and I was creeped out. And that's, I blame the religion for that one, because, you know, I didn't want to talk about my feelings. I reverted inwards. I regressed inside myself. I did not want to talk about it. And even now as an adult, I still feel uncomfortable in certain conversations I can have with, you know, with different ones. It's odd. But anyway, considering I'm a dom who is open-minded, right? So what you said, Bunny, is right. I think the worst thing that a person can go through when you're a teenager is that fear of discussing what you're going through, not having a safe place to talk about it. I didn't have a safe place to talk about it. You know, even when my parents tried to sort of, you know, uncomfortably discuss it, it just felt awful. I didn't like it. And it changed me sexually as a woman. Now I'm still affected by that. And, you know, when you're in puberty, it's confusing, you know, to understand what's happening with your body and your mind. You know, why am I attracted to boys? Why am I unattracted to boys? Why am I attracted to girls? Why am I, you know, there's so many different scenarios, but so sex education is really a huge and very important factor. And I think religion plays a huge factor as well in children being afraid to talk. And now I also wanted to mention something that's really important, that I truly believe to the depths of my core that children should be given the tools to learn about consent. I think they should learn about kink. I think they should learn about the levels of kink and what types of kink are in existence right now. And I'm talking everything, you know, foot fetish, degradation. There's a big thing now called NoFap, and that's like not masturbating. And people are embracing that. They're embracing so many different things. Small penis positivity. Then there's small penis humiliation. And showing these children that, you know, when they get of age to discuss it, when they're in puberty, to know what's safe and what's not, you know, what red flags should pop up when you decide you want to be dominant, what safeties are in place. When you're submissive, how does that affect you in the safety side of things and that safety aspect? You know, what do you do in a bad scene? What do you do in a good scene? What do you do? I mean, rape is always discussed, and as it should. You know, no means no. It's simple. No means no. And it's the same way in kink. No means no. If you have a hard limit, those things should be discussed. Soft, what's a soft limit? What's a hard limit? What is, you know, no limits? What is consensual non-consent? All of these things. It doesn't mean that your child is going to go out and perform all of those things that are, you know, listed. They may see two or three things that appeal to them. You know, they might secretly love feet and they're ashamed of it. Well, talk about, you know, shame and how that does that affect you? And should you really be ashamed? So good point there, Bunny, about sex education. I'm going to pass the mic to you now.
Yeah, so I was on the opposite end of the spectrum. I was never discouraged from exploring my sexuality. So, and the funny thing is, it's like I went to a Catholic school. And they actually did have a sex education program, which I thought, like, I never gave it much thought at the time. It never really occurred to me how that was actually pretty strange for a Catholic grade school to have that. I mean, grade eight, I believe it was grade eight. Actually, now I'm sure it was grade eight. I was just trying to remember where, like, the classroom I was in or something when it was happening. And yeah, it was definitely grade eight. So it's like, it's not like you're not at a ridiculous young age to be learning. Like, you're at an age where you're just starting to come into it. I mean, I just remember, like, I consider myself a little bit of a late bloomer, too. It's funny, I had no interest in girls until I turned 13. It was pretty much the moment I turned 13. That's when I started actually having interest in girls. Because I remember my mom and I went to Florida. We literally flew down on my 13th birthday. And I just remember actually, like, like I said, this was never a thing for me before that. I was checking out girls in bikinis and I was like, whoa. And what you went through It is. It's the that sexual repression that happens usually in religious sects. It's, I mean, there's some that don't sexually repress, but I would say by and large, a lot of them do. I could be wrong on that one. I mean, there are a lot that do. Not going to name any names specifically, but there are a lot that do. And again, like I said, the proof's in the pudding with like the Bible Belt again, down in the US, you see it all the time. There's a lot of just, and we're going to get into this a little bit more with the kink shaming, any kind of shaming when it comes to sex, up to like, oh, you don't have sex until you're married. The whole joke of the shotgun wedding and everything. And I mean, it's in some cases, it's not even a joke. It's happened where people like, you know, a pair of teens had sex and it's like all of a sudden it's like they're getting married at the end of a shotgun. Like, holy shit. I mean, the US has its issues, obviously. Like, tons. I'm sure some of you would agree and disagree, but there it is.
Yeah, and it makes me think of the Puritans. Puritans believe that it is necessary, I'm just actually reading about them right now, to be in a covenant relationship with God in order to be redeemed from one's sinful condition, that God had chosen to reveal salvation through preaching, and that the Holy Spirit was the energizing instrument of salvation. So Puritan belief structure in my upbringing, even my thoughts had to be in question. If I had an impure thought, or if I thought, if I touched myself, or if I masturbated, it was sinful. So anything that I did that had anything to do with sexuality was shameful and sinful. So I can relate to men who, you know, on a different note, are experimenting with their sexuality by, say, something like, you know, putting on panties, which seems like a very simple thing to do. But it's really not. Not when you're brought up in a, oh, that's not masculine enough. You know, you're gay, which is also not a bad thing. But all of these supposed negative connotations to experimenting with your sexuality and experimenting in pleasure. And with religion, it's not about pleasure. It's about worship. It's about sanctity. It's about, you know, the thought police. And I think when you get into kink shaming, it's like becoming one of those instruments of judgment, you know, with your gavel saying, oh, well, that's not good. You know, that's too kinky, or that's weird, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So, you know, we have to be very careful that we don't revert back to, you know, the 1600s, when people were heavily ingrained in Puritanism, separating themselves from Catholicism. And hey, you know, this isn't a discussion about religion, but it does hold a very big role in kink shaming. I truly believe it. When you have a very extremist behavior and belief system, well, kinks just don't seem to fit into that. Or if it's not a kink you understand, then, oh, it's not right, or it's weird, or I don't get it, or they must be mentally ill. And we have to be very cautious about going there and acting that way, or expressing our opinions in that manner. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Bunny, now.
Yeah, the panty thing on men, even just society at large, it's like, it is considered a taboo thing. It's funny because it's like, you know, girls, they can dress up in guys' clothes all they want, and no one bats an eyelash. It's funny how that works, right? It's like, but the moment a guy puts on something feminine, it's like, oh shit, he must be gay. For me, I mean, I had no problem doing it in private. It was like, again, a lot of things. It's like I had no problem doing it in private. That it was fine. But I remember the first time you had me wearing panties like to work or something. I was I was a little put off by it initially. I was like, oh shit, what if I like, what if I'm taking a piss and I, and someone sees them, like, oh shit, you know, like that, those were the thoughts that were flooding through my head. And that was just like, well, whatever. I mean, I'll just make sure I don't, no one sees it. Right. So no big deal. And that was just a normal thing. I mean, I'm pretty sure I only have like two or three pairs of men's underwear. I don't even know where they are anymore. We bought them literally for when I went to the hazmat training at the fire thing, because there was going to, because of the shower situation and everything, all the guy, everyone showered all like in the thing. Right. So I just wanted to have man underwear and no chastity device, obviously. So, and my queen obviously agreed with that. She does. She was like, yeah, that's a good idea. We're going to, yeah, let's do it that way. So.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain times when you want to wear panties, and the majority of the time you are wearing panties, but it's been a progression. It's been an evolution. It's been, over time, you've gotten much more comfortable, and that's basically exclusively what you wear now are female panties. And it's just, it's with time, with experience, you just, it becomes normalized for you. But I would never assert my dominance and say, well, you have to go to this, you know, training session for a weekend and wear female panties if you want to focus on learning and you're not focused on your kink. I mean, people aren't, I think that's what people have to remember, is that, you know, we're not always focused on the kink. We have a day-to-day life, right? And when we come home and we want to unwind and we want to get kinky, then that's our prerogative. I mean, of course, it's always said, but as long as you're not hurting children or animals or your partner, you're not abusive, then your kinks should be something that you can embrace as a time to relax, a time to be excited, a time to feel sexy, feel sexual, relieve stress. You know, there's nothing negative about that. It's like somebody who, on their spare time, likes to paint. It puts them in a nice headspace. And such as a kink, when somebody has a kink, it goes into, you know, a wonderful headspace of relaxation or heightened excitement or eroticism. And I think it's a very healthy place to be, because it releases chemicals in your brain, dopamine. You know, dopamine is so beneficial for happiness. I think that's at the heart of what Bunny and I are trying to communicate with people, is that you are going to find people out there who shock you because they think that what you do is shameful, or they judge you. And it can even come within the community. It can come from femdoms. It can come from dominatrixes that are sadists, or whatever the case may be. It could be from a master who doesn't understand what kink shaming means and how it affects their slave or submissive, because these ones are not enlightened and they need to learn more. You can never stop learning. You always have to continue learning. I've had to learn a lot. I'm always learning. There's more for me to learn. I'm sure I don't understand certain things, but that's only because I haven't taken the time to really get to know them. I haven't taken the time to understand, you know, what it's about. And sometimes you don't have to understand a kink. It's just sexually exciting. You don't have to figure out, well, why do they like it? You know, there might be reasons why. I've always found that intriguing. And there's usually reasons or ways that people interact with others because of a certain thing. I've embraced chastity because I grew up in a very chastity-centric cult. But I look at it in a different way. I don't approach it the same. It's not about shame. It's about experiencing more sexual freedom through being locked. And that's very powerful when you embrace your kink and you say, okay, I understand. But that being said, as I said already, you don't have to always understand it. Sometimes it just is. Maybe a man puts on panties and he gets a hard on, and it's just biology for him. It's just it's his stimulant. Some people use drugs and alcohol for a stimulant to get excited or happy or enjoy the situation. Maybe that's not healthy. In a lot of ways, if it's overdone or misused or abused, it's not healthy. So in the same sense, you know, kinks can be very healthy. And if panties turns a man on, then big whoopity-doo. You know, that shouldn't be something that we make fun of. That's his thing. You know, if for me, teasing and denying a man turns me on, I don't need you to understand why. I just like to do it. Gets me excited. You know, do I like to lock men up? Sure I do. Could there be a relation to my childhood? Could there be a relation to how I was brought up in such a strict cult? Sure. But that's not the only reason I love chastity. It really isn't. I love submissive men. I love the slave mind. I love to care and protect those men. And I honor their desires as part of their sexuality. That is who they are. That's what they enjoy. And I see nothing wrong with that. I don't think it's something that should be shamed. But what do you think, Bunny?
You don't have to understand a kink to just accept it. There's ones I don't understand. It's like, so what? It's not hurting anyone. Who cares? Is it hurting someone's sensibility because you read about it or something? Like, the whole thing goes. If it offends you, don't read it. Don't fucking read it. Who cares? What is your problem? That being said, I mean, when you're in a relationship with someone, it sure helps to understand the kink. I mean, it's okay. So I'm going to segue a little bit into actually reading a quote from a subreddit called Kink Shaming. So this is going to be interesting, right? This one was the first to catch my eye, actually. So there's a few. I'm kind of going through it as we're recording. This one is the cuckold kink has to the worst, obviously has to be the most degrading kink ever. It doesn't even seem like a proper kink. It actually seems more like a deep-seated insecurity and inferiority complex that turned into a kink because the cuck has no self-respect or even respect for their partner. Where to start with that one? First of all, this is the exact reason, this thinking is the exact reason why I actually had a difficult time bringing this up to my queen. Seriously, it's like, okay, I even thought this way for a while. Like, do I really hate myself this much? Seriously. But then it started dawning on me. It's like, okay, yeah, sure. It does have there is a psychological component to it. I mean, I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. Like, I had a girlfriend who cheated on me. And it was like, she did it behind my back. It really hurt. I mean, honestly, I had no interest in being in a serious relationship for like at least 4 or 5 years. Absolutely none. So, and that's the state it left me in. So yeah, cheating hurts. And eventually, like when it started to heal, I guess I started having some cuck fantasies. So, and again, it was like, I'm like, why am I having these? Why is this? And then I think it was something that actually, when we did a podcast with Carly DeVille, formerly of the Ask Carlos show, we actually did three separate episodes. We recorded it all at once, actually. But I do remember, and this kind of stuck with me, and this is kind of actually what made me realize that my kink wasn't something wrong with me? And I quote, we often eroticize pain, which it made total sense. That it was like a big kaboom moment for me. Like, haha, oh ho. Like, it's like, oh, that makes perfect sense then. Like, that makes absolutely perfect sense. So that at that point, I understood the psychology behind it. And again, it took, at that point, it still took quite some time for me to even bring it up to you, my queen. It was still difficult. I made that writing recently on FetLife that basically described it, the whole thing. So I'm not going to go into too much detail here about it. But yeah, it was a difficult thing. And we both struggled with it. It's not something we take lightly. And again, I didn't take it lightly out of respect for you, my queen. There was no way I was taking this lightly. It is a delicate situation. Like, it really is. I mean, you're including a third person. Like, you have to take everyone's feelings into account here. It's not just like, oh, well, let's go to a sex club and get fucked. I mean, some people do that, but that's just not how we roll. And again, I'm not shaming anyone who does that. That's just not what we do.
So that, you know, that's a really good fetish to discuss, because in the subreddit, I noticed when they were talking about embracing that these people want to embrace kink shaming. They think that, well, why can't we shame people for doing things that are, you know, odd or unacceptable or whatever the case may be. But as far as cuckold, I understand why some men are ashamed of even discussing it with their partner, because there's this ideal in society, this imaginary, I want to say ideal, of, you know, this romance novel where the woman finds her prince charming and he's a manly man and they have a beautiful romance and he asks for her hand in marriage and it's this big romantic event and perfect, you know, every step of the way is perfect and they get married and they have amazing sex and they have children and then they get a dog and then they have a house and they grow old together and they hold hands walking into the sunset, you know, this fantasy land, you know, where people think that life is some sort of a fairy tale. And I would suggest that life can be a fairy tale, but it doesn't have to be in those specific steps with those specific gender norms. I'm sorry. It's just, hey, if that's your reality and that's what you want and that's what you realize and your partner is like that, that's fantastic. I mean, I lived somewhat of that lifestyle when I was in the religion. I got married to a manly man. I was the female who cooked, cleaned, and bore children, but he was a totally different kind of a man. So even that stigma of what he was for me wasn't what the religion thought he was to me. It was actually very dominant, but in a submissive manner to me. He had high respect for me as a woman. And I tell you, our life was not easy. We didn't have a house and riches and such. It was not that supposed fantasy that people dream of when they're growing up in a family dynamic that says that's how it needs to be. And look at us now. I mean, if any of you follow my story, he's happy. He's got a partner. You know, he's still my husband. That might blow people's minds. They think, well, why don't you get a divorce? If he's got a girlfriend and you've got a slave, well, that's unnecessary for us. It's not part of the equation. And we're not staying married to, you know, keep some sort of this visual experience for our family members. It has nothing to do with that. It's just not, we're not living by the book anymore. We don't have to get a divorce to make it right for his girlfriend, for Bunny, for me, for him. We still love each other. You know, sexually, it's not, we don't engage. That doesn't mean we don't still have deep love for each other. We have deep love and respect. You know, when we explored and started talking about our fantasies, even though we were living in a very repressed religious state, basically, we had to sort of hide in secret our own kinks and our own fantasies. And because we were best friends, we could say, hey, what about this? What about that? Oh, that's taboo, but well, is it really taboo? And he's always said, he says, you know, I'm a libertine. I've always been a libertine. And he did respect our marriage when we were, you know, singular in that agreement. So we had negotiations even before we knew what negotiation was. But when he started telling me his fantasies as a husband to me, it did. It initially it was, oh my God, what are we talking about here? I don't understand. And I think with misunderstanding comes emotion. And for me, I was kind of, he wants me to do this. And he kind of had a bit of a cuckolding fantasy where I would meet up with bulls and be sexually pleasured. And he would then repossess me. So he would take me back, basically. He would then dominate me and take me back. I know there's a term for it. Basically, it was like, I'm a hot wife. He's being a voyeur. He's watching me get fucked. And then he takes me and fucks me. So it's almost as if it's a voyeurism, cuck fantasy, where I have 1, 2, 3 guys enjoying me because I'm so wonderful and beautiful. And it's about being proud of your wife. It's a hot wife. She's gorgeous and men want her. And at the end of the day, he gets to take me home. So it's not so much about being bound and watching. There's all different styles of cuckoldry. And I think that's what people forget, you know, when they say something like Bunny had mentioned, how, oh, being a cuck is about the weirdest fetish around. That must mean that you have low self-esteem. Well, actually, no, you have high trust. You have high esteem. You have extreme love for the partner that you have, and you want to see her or him be pleasured. And that is a turn on. And I think that's actually something that a lot of women don't understand, is that men love to see their partner pleasured. It gets them off. And so many of us are afraid to express ourselves in orgasm or to feel out of control. But when we do, it actually serves to increase the sexual attraction for a man with his partner. And, you know, I'm not talking about in every single case. I mean, but in this particular fetish, that's the psychology involved. You trust your partner so much that you're willing to see them engage with another partner or partners. And when that happens, it's about growing and becoming stronger as a partnership, exploring sexuality, exploring pleasure. That should never be degraded by anybody. I know there's people that would not engage in that. Oh, they say it's not for me. That's fine. It's not for you. But maybe for you, it's something else. And maybe it's not for me. But that's the beauty of life, is there's variety. And we should honor each other's originality and variety. And there's so many different combinations in the bedroom. Anything to say about that, Bunny?
I can't help to but think back to a previous episode where we were talking about, like, women feel ashamed to have, like to express their sexuality in certain ways. And again, it goes back to, like, you know, if you do, it's like you get slut shamed. And it's like, okay, why is it okay for a guy to be a playa? How is it okay for that and a woman not to express herself sexually? I mean, like, to me, there's no difference. It just makes no sense to shame a woman, but, you know, idolize a guy for doing the exact same thing. When it comes, like, biologically, speaking, women are more complex sexually. Like there's a lot more you need to know to get a woman off. I mean, it's not, like I said, guy, you just, you know, go back and forth, in and out, jerk it, and you're done. Whatever, you come. Sure, there is psychological things there to it. That's not always the thing, but for women, it is like more, hey, you gotta work more to get her off. You have to know what you're doing. And what I'm trying to say here is that with that sexual shaming, it's like women tend to be a little bit more reserved. And it's a shame, because it's like, okay, well, why not just get off? It's like, I personally don't judge. And that's why I said when you first like squirted, I was like over the top with joy. I was like, oh shit, that's awesome. Like, I couldn't, I thought it was the best thing ever. You were embarrassed by it, but I had to tell you, I'm like, no, that was amazing. Like, and again, like that is, like, that's a problem that women have, is that there is so much like shaming for them getting pleasure. I mean, it's a little off topic with the whole kink shaming, but it is related, right? That kink shaming and shaming someone for their sexuality. I mean, it's unrelated, but it is related. It's the same thing in a lot of ways. Anyways, I'm going to read another quote I have, and I'm actually going to pass it straight back to you after I read it and see what your thoughts are on it. It says, "Your weird fetishes aren't necessarily sexual in nature. Sick, cruel would probably be a better word to describe them." Thoughts?
So that was up on the Reddit discussion board about kink shaming and how some people think that it's okay to kink shame. And so I would say, even the very beginning word, like your weird fetishes aren't necessarily sexual in nature. So whoever wrote this thinks that somebody else's fetish, it might be weird, even if it's not sexual. Like, for example, if somebody likes latex, or they like windbreakers, you know, my slave enjoys windbreakers, and or feet, or chastity, you know, some people could consider them as not being sexual. And, you know, my slave can go out because it's cool out and wear his windbreaker, and he's not wearing it in a sexual manner. It's when somebody looks at him, they don't think of it as a sexual thing. But when we're in the bedroom playing and we're incorporating that into our play, then yes, that can be sexual in nature. So, and I like to be in control of the windbreaker, because it's one of his fetishes. And it, for me, I think it's, you know, there's a fine line between bringing your fetish out into public and not. And you have to be cautious about that. You know, if, for example, if I tell somebody who's into diapers to go out and pick something up at the grocery store or at a corner store, you know, and maybe he's taking a dump in his diaper, for example, and it's embarrassing. Well, before we do that, actually, I would have a negotiation where I say, you're not to go anywhere near any children or anybody who you may offend. So you're going to go through that experience feeling embarrassed, but you're also going to be cognizant of who is around you at the time. You know, so it's about being conscious and conscientious with your kinks and not taking that sexuality into places where it's inappropriate. You know, you can never force your fetish on somebody. I had a sissy once want me to take him out, and he wanted to try on some clothing. Hey, no problem. We were going to a particular store, and I'm very guarded about what areas people go to. So before we went into that store, it actually was a roller derby gear and apparel store where the majority of people going in are adult. And I called ahead. I called in advance. And I talked to the owner, who I knew. And I said, look, I'm bringing somebody in. He likes to dress up as a woman. Are you cool with that? She said, no problem at all. I said, well, he wants to try on some booty shorts because he wants to buy some to wear at home. Are you cool with that? No problem. Okay, so I cleared it with her first. And he went into the store. I went in with him, of course, because I was his dom. I was in charge of that experience. So we picked out some items. It was exciting for him to pick out some items. And he went into the change room. And he wanted her to see him dressed in the outfit. Well, I did not feel comfortable with that because that was putting his fetish on her. This was something that the two of us were engaging in. And even though she was open-minded and he needed to open the door to look at a mirror, to look at himself, I made sure to block his outfit from her view. And that was to honor her feelings. Even though everybody thinks, well, roller derby girls are probably pretty open-minded. That might be the case, but she's still an individual. And I wasn't going to put his sexual fetish on display to her because he liked to be an exhibitionist. And that was one of his kinks as well. So you have to be very guarded and cautious about what you do with your kink. And it has nothing to do with shaming him, but it's also about protecting others. And you don't want somebody getting their jollies off with somebody who's unsuspecting and not consenting. So if I sent somebody to the corner store, I knew that a particular man was behind the counter at a particular time. He does not give a shit. He really doesn't. So if somebody goes in and he's got a full diaper, whatever, you know, usually he had on two diapers, so you can't really smell it anyway. But I'm going to go on with the rest of this quote. Sick, cruel would probably be a better word to describe them. So fetishes are not sick and cruel. And pain play, you know, if that's what the person expressing themselves in this quote mean, that sick and cruel is a better term or a word to describe them, I would say that's wrong. Maybe to you it's sick and cruel. Maybe you don't want to be choked. Maybe you don't want to engage in breath play. Maybe you don't want to be whipped. Maybe you don't want to be dominated by a master, whether it be female or male. If that's not your thing, that's not your thing. Maybe in your mind that's sick and cruel, but it's only because you don't understand the dynamics and the negotiations, the heavy negotiations that are involved in that kind of a partnership. And most DOMs that are high protocol, that know their stuff, if they have any character whatsoever, they're actually quite loving and protective of their partner. And they only put their partner through the things that they agree to put them through. They want to be put through that, not because they're psychologically damaged. I'm sorry. People are very sane. And that is what Bunny actually you'd said to me yesterday. You know, consenting, safe, sane, consensual, right? The sane is very important. The most important aspect of kink. You have to be sane when you go into breath play. If you're not, it's dangerous. If you're going into impact play and you're sadistic, but you have no control over your violent tendencies, then that crosses a line, you know? You can have vanilla sex with somebody and do it non-consensually and rape somebody, and they didn't ask for that. And they can be screaming, no, 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 and you don't stop because, oh, well, I'm her boyfriend. I'm allowed. I'm her husband. I'm allowed. I'm his wife. I can hit him. He's my husband. I can hit him. No, you can't. Sorry. There's a fine line between abuse and kink. So, and we've said that before. So do you want to add something to that there, Bunny?
Yeah. I mean, that whole quote really struck me as like, it just comes across as ignorant. Just to call it sick and cruel because you don't understand it. I mean, that's the very definite. Like, I personally find this be the very definition of kink shaming right there. It just can't. That's what it came across as. 100%. Your weird fetishes aren't necessarily sexual in nature. Sick, cruel would be a better word to describe them. I mean, that tends to be the exact mindset when someone kink shames. Like, they don't understand it, so I'm going to just shame you for it. And this whole site is, or this whole subreddit is just like, it's kind of weird because it's a weird mixed bag, I found. It has, like, people who are, like, flat out shaming people for their kinks, but then it has people, like, actually asking about their kinks. And it's a very strange thing to go through this site. So yeah, that's more or less what I have to say about that.
I think that when we talk about different kinks, you know, it's important not to come at it as if we understand everything about each of those kinks. I think that's the problem with people today, is that if they don't understand it, they just automatically think it's weird. If they don't understand you, they don't understand your gender identity, they don't understand your kinks, then they just automatically make a judgment. And I think that's where it comes down to. It boils down to judgment. We don't want to judge others unless we understand. And the only way to understand is to talk about it. And as it said in that Psychology Today, unless you understand something, you know, you have to really understand it before you can make a judgment call on that. And that's what's happening, is that the minute we end up in a place of judgment, then we regress back to, you know, the 1800s, the misunderstanding, the hate. And it ends up becoming hate, because we start to dig in. We start to think, well, I don't understand that. It must be bad. You know, I don't understand. Years ago, interracial marriage, and it wasn't that many years ago. You know, my aunt and my uncle were an interracial couple. And even to find a rental for them, to rent a townhouse or a house for them, was very difficult. She had to go on her own. She couldn't bring her own husband to find a place to live, because nobody wanted a black man and a white woman to live in their condo or their townhouse, you know, and that was in the 70s, for God's sakes. I mean, we don't want to end up in a place where we get so judgmental about things that we revert back to those times. There was a Dom recently, and I'm not going to get into the details, but who had said some pretty public things about taking a man to a glory hole. Well, if you're blatantly homosexual, why don't you do it yourself? Well, she didn't understand. You know, first of all, she's judging him, saying he's homosexual because he wants to experience a homosexual act. I mean, that doesn't even make a person homosexual. I see cross-dressers or sissies that are pegged as... It's funny I say pegged, but even pegging seems like it's a gay act, you know, and it's not. It just because you play in a certain kink or you enjoy a certain degradation or engagement that's considered humiliating for you, maybe for you going to a glory hole is humiliating. For another man, wearing panties is humiliating. And that doesn't degrade the female, you know, female panties. It doesn't say, oh, well, it's degrading to be a woman. It's not. That's not the situation. It's a person is being put into an uncomfortable situation. And there can be a number of scenarios that might embarrass a number of different people. It could be as simple as holding hands on a street with another man, if you're a man, or even holding hands as a heterosexual couple is embarrassing, but you're pushing your boundaries. You're trying to do these things because at the end of the day, it's exciting. It ends up being exciting for you, and it's pushing your boundaries. It's expanding your mind. You're trying something new that in your day-to-day life you would not try, but because you want to try something new, you don't call somebody gay or whatever the case may be, just because they want to go to a glory hole. They might be a degradation slave. They might be a humiliation slave. And for them, doing that would be the ultimate act of humiliation. You know, maybe kissing somebody's feet or licking their feet or licking their armpits is embarrassing. Do you shame them for it? No, it's something they want to try. It's degradation fetish. It seems like it's a mean thing. You know, women who degrade men is just terrible. They're just mean bitches. But if it's pre-negotiated, it's a kink. It's something they want to try. So we have to be careful what we say. And we also can't degrade men for wanting to dress up because, well, how, you know, I don't want to dress up some ugly man. Like, I'm not a magician. Well, how about you try being more creative and dress a man up? Give it a try. You might be surprised. I tell you, when I go out in public without makeup, I'm not the prettiest thing on the planet. You know, but when I throw a little makeup on, what? I mean, Bunny's looking at me funny.
I think you're sexy as hell.
Well, of course he thinks I'm sexy as hell, but I'm just saying, I'm trying to make a comparison. Okay. There's some men that without makeup, they look like a man. They just are plain, for example. But when you add a little lipstick and a little eyeliner, you throw a pretty, you know, wig on them, they're gorgeous. You know, and women are found saying it all the time. Oh my gosh, I wish I could be as pretty as that man. You know, dressed in drag. He's so pretty. You know, you appreciate that beauty. I appreciate the beauty. You know, I can appreciate a man's beauty. I can appreciate an attractive man. I can appreciate an attractive woman. I can also appreciate the fact that some women don't feel like dressing up. That's fine. It's not their thing. Don't shame them because they don't wear makeup. I don't shame myself for not wearing makeup. You know, am I all femmed out when I'm not wearing makeup? No. I'm more masculine. I don't give a shit. Who cares? Right? It's being gender fluid.
Yeah.
I don't feel the need to wear lipstick 24/7 to be pretty, you know, and I don't expect women to be dressed up, you know, feminine all the time, but some enjoy that. So let them do it. Live and let live, I say. Live and let live. But don't tear people down. Show love. Be loving. Care. And that's my message.
I think we need to stop going straight to judging people for their kinks and just try to open up a dialogue. It should be that simple. I mean, we're a species that has this amazing ability to communicate. So we should be able to just sit there and say, okay, I don't understand this fetish of yours. So what's it about? And the funny thing is, like, most kinky people are more than happy to talk about their fetish. We're more than happy to sit there and say, oh yeah, like chastity, and like, I'm more than happy to talk about it with someone who's a novice. If they have questions, yeah, I'm more than happy to talk about it. If you don't understand it, like, great, just come up and just talk about it. Like, you can even do internet research. I mean, there's so many resources out there. Just don't go straight to judging.
And I think it's there's a time and a place for everything. So, you know, if somebody's uncomfortable talking about sexual things, then you're not going to go on and start talking about sexual things around them. I mean, it's about courtesy, common courtesy. And they might have reasons for not being sexual. Maybe they're more modest. Maybe they're mentally, that's just how they are. Maybe they're shy. Maybe they don't feel comfortable, whatever the case might be. But it's about respecting one another, and it's about figuring out the temperature of the room, basically. So if you're in a situation where you're pushing your kinks on others and it's making them uncomfortable, then you're crossing the line. And that's why I talked about that one sissy. And I said, look, like, I told them afterwards, you can't do that. It makes me uncomfortable. It made me, as a fellow female of this other woman who owned this store, who had graciously let us come in, he was pushing her boundaries. He was pushing the envelope because of his his kink. And so in that case, I had to take the lead and say, no, you can't do it. Get changed. If you want to buy something, fine. But I actually remember talking to him about it after, and he had to apologize to her for his behavior because it was bad behavior. So, you know, if we're respectful, we have manners, and we're in a good setting to talk and discuss it, and the conversation is opened up on the floor, then I think it's important to speak about kinks. And I think that when somebody is being judgmental, we need to be brave enough to stand up to the person and say, no, what you're doing is hateful. It's not right. It's detrimental to people because you don't know who in that room has gone through extreme shame. And I know what shame is about, and it's a very painful thing to experience. And the first thing it makes you want to do is to escape into a shell, kind of like a turtle. You know, protect your soft parts. And kink is a soft part. You know, having desires that are out of the box, so to speak, that's a soft spot. And so we need to treat it as such, as delicate and as important and as sacred to that person. And we have to put ourselves out a little bit to understand other people's point of views because they really do matter. I have to say, like, for example, Harry Styles. Everybody wants to know, oh, what sexuality are you? What are you? What is your definition? What's your label? And he's not comfortable in talking about that, and that's his right. He could be the most kinky person in the world, most open-minded person in the world. And we can already tell from seeing how artistic he is, you know, in his dress and how fearless he is in the things that he wears and how he is as an artist, a musician in his private life. But certain things are private, so we shouldn't be judging. We shouldn't be putting a label on people, and we shouldn't be shaming them, because the minute we do that, we accept hate and we forget about love. And when you forget about love and you start to hate, it causes divisions and we don't bond and we don't grow as a society. There's room for everybody. You know, that show Love, Don't Judge, it's amazing because you see many different styles of couples. One that loves puppy play and her partner is her master. Such deep love that's involved in that partnership I saw. There's other examples of different shows that are out there that help to open people's minds about new things and new ways of loving and asexuality and all of that, and how you can still have a loving partnership in there. I guess the main message that Bunny and I have is to love one another, try to learn, be kind, and challenge yourself. Challenge your verbalization. And is it right? Is it wrong? And if it is wrong, tweak it, adjust it, apologize, and be better, become better. That's what's going to make this planet more tolerable to live in. So I guess that's where I'm going to end it for now. So thank you for tuning in. I know there's lots more to say about kink shaming, but overall, let's just love each other. And in the meantime, you can listen to my other podcasts and learn some more about different kinks. And you can go to my OnlyFans and Twitter, friend me on FetLife. If you want to explore chastity, it's a fun, safe thing to do if it's done right. You can go to lockedinlust.com and you can purchase a device or a strap-on for 15% off using discount code ChastityQueen. So until next time, my lovelies, bye for now. And thank you, Bunny. I really appreciate your feedback and your love and your open-mindedness in this discussion.